This is episode number 234 with Lisa Messenger. Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin. Welcome everyone to today's episode. I'm very excited about this. But I have a very special guest today. Her name is Lisa Messenger. And I found out about Lisa on Instagram probably like, 6 to 7 months ago, maybe even a year ago, because I was doing research for a magazine that I was doing. And I saw how incredibly talented she was and how beautiful her design was for a magazine that she has called The Collective. And I'm so impressed with what she's created. She's going to tell you all the numbers she's created, how she's got distribution throughout these airports and Barnes & Noble and bookstores. And she's got global distribution, how she's crushing it, both print magazine and digital magazine, and how she built a business as an entrepreneur in Australia to bring it to the big dogs here in the U.S. Her whole story or journey of building this from scratch with just an idea and a dream, having zero clue of what she was doing. I think you guys are going to get really inspired by this. So make sure to share this with your friends. It's lewishowes.com/234. Share it out with your friends who are want this inspiration. And without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into this episode with the one, the only Lisa Messenger.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until...
That presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case...
Unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. Very excited about our guest today. Her name is Lisa Messenger. Thanks so much for coming on, Lisa.
Fantastic. It's so great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm very excited. You are, I think you're the second or third Aussie who's been on the show. So congratulations for making it on. There's not many of you.
But I'm impressed. Thank you. I feel very special.
Now, I want to read a quick little part of your bio, then talk a little bit more about you. You have a new book out called Money and Mindfulness, about living in abundance. And you have, you've got this magazine, which is really interesting to me. So I'll talk about that in a second. But you're a vibrant, game-changing CEO and a creative director of The Messenger Group. And as well, you're the editor-in-chief of The Collective Magazine, which is where I found out about you. And it's an entrepreneurial and lifestyle magazine distributed in more than 37 countries with a mandate to disrupt, challenge, and inspire. In addition, you have worked globally in events, sponsorship, marketing, PR, and publishing. You've written or co-authored over a dozen books, and your group has published more than 400 books for companies and individuals. So I'm very excited to connect with you. I think I found out about you probably 6 or 7 months ago. I believe someone tagged a photo of yours of The Collective magazine on Instagram, and I'm an Instagram whore right now, just loving it. So I was instantly attracted to the design and the intention of not only the images, but your language that you use, whether it's you using yourself or your team, but just the way you guys put out great content. I was really inspired by it. And I'm inspired by that lifestyle type of message. So thanks for being here. And I'm excited to kind of dive in to learn more about you and how you've become so successful.
Thank you. Well, success. Yeah. I'm just on the, it's the very beginning of a very, very big vision, but let's see where that goes.
Of course. Now I'm curious, let's start with the magazine. When did you start this magazine? Why did you start it? And what was your vision for it?
So it's a good question, and it's a completely crazy story. So I had been publishing accidentally books for years, and that's because I decided to write a book about 10 years ago on happiness because I was incredibly unhappy.
Right? And we teach what we need to learn.
Absolutely.
Isn't that the truth?
I went on this kind of – that was kind of the beginning of my – quest for kind of self-development. And, you know, I've since trekked the Western Ghats in India and done, you know, raw food vegan communes in Costa Rica and all sorts of crazy things. And so I self-published a book about 10 years ago on happiness, which was really just a compilation of what happiness meant to a whole pile of people in my own eternal search for it. And since then we've published a lot of books, but they were quite one-dimensional. And so about nearly 3 years ago, I just came up with this idea for, you know, why don't I felt like I was living in this bubble, and I thought, I've got access to all these extraordinary, inspirational, you know, amazing people, and I wanted to really take that out and give it a bigger voice and platform. And I'd never worked for a magazine, and at the time I had three staff all under the age of 25, none of whom had worked for a magazine either. And so we had no idea what we were doing at all, and then decided to go into this industry that people said was either dead or dying. So it was a real recipe for disaster.
Wow.
But I knew nothing at the time about the digital landscape, so it was largely born out of naivety. And I think naivety can be a really helpful thing sometimes because, yeah, I didn't know what everyone else was saying couldn't be done, and it just seemed sort of a logical platform for me. Had I have known just how big it would get or how hard it would be, and I think that's, you know, the case for many entrepreneurs, it would have maybe been a different story at the time. But my vision was and still remains to, you know, to tell inspirational stories that are accessible and attainable and relatable. I'd been on the other side of the media for so many years, and people would ask me the same old questions and I'd give the same old answers, which was great for our spin and hype, but it didn't really help the reader, I didn't feel. And so I wanted something that would talk about, you know, extraordinary people, but also give the kind of how-tos. How did they get there? And what were the tough times? And what's the real story? And so it just took off. And now it's, as you said, in 37 countries, and we've got like about 18 different revenue streams. And
wow.
But it's all about empowering people to be the very best version of themselves. And that is my only mandate. And, you know, we'll interview anyone as long as they're prepared to be real and authentic and vulnerable and courageous. So, yeah.
I love that. And when did you say you launched it originally?
So 2.5 years ago it was launched. And it's sort of just been growing since then. And it's been and continues to be an absolutely crazy journey.
It's crazy. I mean, you have like every celebrity on the cover. I feel like, how do you get all those, how do you get them all to commit to coming on the cover? Are they all custom shoots, or are they stock images, or are they the relationships you built up over the years?
Yeah, so I knew nothing about anything. Like, literally, I can't even tell you, even though we'd published a lot of books. I mean, putting books together in comparison to a magazine, and I know you've just written one, and so you will know. I mean, writing it's kind of a labor in itself, but then really it's just about editing, proofreading, design, right, and print, and it's relatively you know, seamless in comparison to a magazine, which in every issue we have between 50 and 93 was our largest issues, different stories. And I've always said we will never syndicate anything. So every single story in the magazine, we interview other people ourselves. Now, the covers are interesting because the magazine itself is essentially a business and entrepreneurial magazine, but in Australia alone, there's over 5,500 print magazines. And so I had to play the game a bit. And I always talk to people about, you know, the finding that fine line between, you know, doing good in the world and having commercial acumen. And it drove me nuts that I decided, early on, I decided, well, I kind of have to put celebrities on the cover to be able to get cut through to sit next to the Vogues and the Vanity Fairs and the Tatlers and all the big guys and to get noticed. And as much as it killed me to put celebs on the cover, because I was like, I just want normal entrepreneurs and extraordinary people on the cover, I knew that I needed to be placed there in newsstand so that people would actually pick it up. And I thought, well, if they pick it up and they realize that this magazine is all about inspiration and doing good in the world, then I've kind of done my job. Now, that's a long way of answering your question, so I'll answer it because it's quite a funny story. The first three issues I had the the biggest kind of names that of people that I knew personally in Australia on the covers. And then I thought, well, this is kind of ridiculous because I'm going to run out of friends soon that are well enough known to be on covers. And also I thought, well, you know, my vision was to take it to the rest of the world. And I thought, well, these people aren't going to make mean anything to anyone in the rest of the world. Right. And then I decided after three issues to take a punt, and I flew to Toronto, which is where they were having the global, magazine distributors conference, essentially. Wow. And that's where I did a lot of the deals. And I thought, well, I can't fly over there with these Aussie covers. Like, no one's going to take me seriously. And I had no idea at the time how to get, you know, celebrities or nothing. I'd never been in this world. So I noticed in Australia that, you know, a lot of the big brands were, you know, they obviously have celebrity endorsements and they pay them a lot of money to be a part of it. And I was kind of desperate, and it was like 2 days before we went to print on issue four, and there's a brand called Olli Lindgaard, which is out of Denmark. And they had Helena Christensen as their, pinup girl at the time. So I contacted them and said, do you have a shot that's, you know, that you're not using as part of your campaign, and is there any way I can use it for a cover? And they were like, of course, she's wearing our jewelry. We'd love you to. So I went to the States with this cover with Helena Christensen on it. And then I realized that, you know, people started taking notice. And then I just started really forging relationships with publicists in mostly LA and New York, to be honest. And, you know, convincing all of them that we were worthy of, you know, having actual celebrities that wanted to be in the magazine on the covers.
Wow.
And, you know, and then it's complex. And I mean, this may not mean much to people who are listening, but I always say, you know, don't listen for kind of my world, which is now magazines and entrepreneurialism, but listen to, you know, what's applicable, because there's always parallels with whatever anyone's doing.
Sure.
But so we started forging these relationships, and, you know, bigger and bigger people started saying yes to being interviewed. And I think, you know, success builds success and hype builds hype and all that kind of thing. And yeah, and so, but it's complex. I mean, I don't know how much you know about all of this. I'm assuming a fair bit, but it's, you know, you get someone to agree to an interview, but then most of the celebrities are shot by, you know, photographers who often have nothing to do with the publicists, and so then you have to contact them separately. And so, yes, a lot of it is buying images that, you know, we have exclusive rights for, and then they have to be approved by the celebrities,
it's
publicists, and on it goes.
Oh
yeah,
it's I mean,
it can be like 6 months to a year.
Oh, no, I get it. I mean, just, you know, working with celebrities for my podcast is a lot of work. Just making sure, because they want to listen to everything. Their PR team, their legal team needs to listen to it first before they can say that it'll go live. And it's just like a, you know, I have to edit video and all these other things constantly.
Yeah.
It's just it can be a hassle sometimes. And I tried to launch, and I know a little bit about the magazine world, not even in a fraction as much as you do, but I tried to launch a digital magazine through iTunes about a year ago. And just the process. And this isn't even a print magazine. Yours is print and digital, correct?
Yours is
print and digital. Yeah.
And I'll talk a bit more about that as well, like why we've got so many different layers now.
So I tried to launch a digital one, and I've got three issues that are beautifully designed. I mean, they're incredible looking, and I spent a lot of time and money on them, but just the whole landscape of working with iTunes and trying to launch it. It took like 3 months of technical issues with just launching it that I decided to put it on hold because I've got this book coming out that I was like, I'll do it another time if it makes sense. But essentially, 6 months of time and energy for not launching something. I learned a lot about the process and that it's extremely complicated and it takes
it's
a lot
so
of moving
complex.
Parts.
There's so many moving parts. And, you know, for an instant gratification junkie like me who moves very fast, it's kind of like does my head in. Luckily, my team deal with all the detail, which I'm hideous at, and I kind of just swan in at the end of the process and say, whoopee. But, you know, it's kind of interesting because we got Ryan Gosling for a cover, and it was kind of interesting. Once we got him, kind of the world was our oyster, and publicists started contacting us, which was interesting. And so, and I think for anyone in business or indeed life, you know, there's all these catalysts and turning points and aha moments, and it's just hanging in there long enough and also trying to stop and cliche, smell the roses and remember, mm-hmm. you know, where we came from and all that kind of thing and go, okay, because it's tough. Every day is tough, but it's also, you know, it's exciting and it's full of high-fueled adrenaline and it's a big journey.
Yeah, it's the same. You know, it's similar with my podcast. Once I started to get these A-list celebrities or influencers, it became a lot easier to get anyone else I wanted to. And they all agree to come on afterwards once they see the reach, once they see who else has been on there. It's just kind of getting those few people early on to believe in what you're creating. And the thing I love about your magazine, it's designed so beautifully and it's so inspiring that who wouldn't want to be on the cover? That's the thing. It's because you do a great job of delivering it so that people can receive it in an inspiring way. It's just so lovely. So I'm curious.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm curious, do you have like distribution numbers as well? Because 2.5 years is not that long for a magazine to be out. Can you give numbers on circulation with the print and also digital and talk about some of the revenue streams that you bring revenue in from?
So let me start with the different revenue streams because I think this is an important one. When I get asked, and you probably get asked this a lot as well, I do a lot of public speaking now, and the similar themes in the questions are kind of like, you know, people say to me, where are you going to be in 5 years? Or, you know, and I'm like, I don't know where I'm going to be in 5 days. Now that's exactly. That's not to be facetious or complacent. But what I mean by that is I think so many people get attached to a specific outcome or, you know, they don't surrender to a process. They have, this is what it's going to look like. And they spend, you know, they might write a business plan that's 100 pages and it sucks up all their time, energy, money, and everything else. And then, you know, they're destined for a huge failure if indeed at the end of it all, there's no market. And so what I say is what I stand for, my vision is unwavering and it is absolutely 100% resolute until the day I die. And that is now to be an entrepreneur for entrepreneurs, living my life out loud and showing that anything's possible. And with the collective platform, it's all about showcasing inspirational brands and extraordinary individuals and empowering people to live their best life. Mm-hmm. So that will never change. But what I really talk to people a lot about is the platform now is completely irrelevant. It doesn't really matter if we're delivering a print magazine, if I'm doing a podcast with you, if I'm doing a speaking gig, if I'm writing a book, if we're social media. We do a lot of events and all that kind of thing. And what I looked at, and I mean, I think again, don't think about magazine land, but think about how this applies to you. But I looked at the traditional magazine model, and luckily, I mean, doing books, I'd never had any advertising dollars in my life. So while traditional magazines were reliant on ad dollars, I was like, ad dollars were just a bonus for me. So from the very start, I thought very differently. And I was like, I just had no expectation about ad dollars. So I came at it from a different angle.
Well,
and
most people, that's the 90% of the income, right?
100%. And so we sell a page in the magazine for $8,000, but I thought, and you know, a lot of time you have to discount to $5,000 or whatever. And so the print magazine in Australia alone costs me $350,000 an issue, so each month to put it out. So I was like, well, if we're selling individual ad pages at $5,000 to $8,000 a page, that's going to take me a long time. And as you said, when you're an unknown, why are the Chanels and the Nikes and all the big brands of the world even going to come near us? So I thought about it from a very different perspective to start with, and I went instead to big brands like big banks and people, and I said, I want you to give me $50,000 a month. So it's kind of like so counterintuitive. But I said, for that, you know, you can have 5,000 copies of the magazine that you can use as premiums, incentives, gifts, rewards. Get them out to your community. And, you know, whilst
so you're pre-selling.
I pre-sell everything. I never, ever do anything until I pre-sell.
That's what I preach all the time for entrepreneurs. When you want to create an online course, which I've done many of them, I always say do a webinar, sell it first, and then if people buy it, then you give it to them in the next couple of weeks. But never spend 3 to 6 months developing something unless you know people are going to buy it.
Yeah. And that we sound like we're from the same gene
we're
pool.
We're from the different parts of the world, but the same mindset. I love it.
I love it. Yeah. So I actually, I talk about this in my first book, Daring and Disruptive, but I actually probably knocked on 80 doors, and I'm sort of from the wow. Lisa Messenger School of fail fast. So that was kind of like not failing fast. Huh. But also when you know you're onto a good idea, I just really believed in the magazine so much. And finally I went to Australia's largest bank, and they had a campaign at the time called Can. It's all about, you know, you can. So I thought, well, they can't possibly say they can't. So that was my irrational logic. And I met with the chief marketing officer after stalking him for about 3 months. And I said to him, you know, I this is my vision and everything. And luckily he was still a big advocate for print and also for entrepreneurs. And so he said, how much do you need? So that first deal, I mean, I had a couple of, you know, indicative pages of what I thought the magazine would look like. And it has iterated many times since then. But sure. I just said, look, I need 200 grand. And it was 50 grand an issue for the first four issues, which just gave me a bit of, you know, financial help. But also what it was that someone outside of me believed in me, and I was suddenly accountable to someone else. And I felt like I really needed to deliver. And so, you know, that's how it kind of all started.
Mm,
yeah, but so we have many, many different revenue streams now, because I realize that, you know, we need to be where our readers want at a time they want, you know, in a format they want. And so some people want to come to events and interact with people from the pages of the magazine. Some people want to, you know, go on the website and get their daily feed. Some people want to sit down with a magazine once a month. Some people just want to scroll through Instagram. So I'm very aware of that. And it's something also that helps us to be an integrated platform to bring, you know, all our partners on board. And yeah, so it kind of working, and we're still keeping our head afloat somehow.
Yeah, that's cool. And so what are like the...
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share, because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am, or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until
the Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
What are the maybe the top 3 to 4 revenue streams? Maybe the main ones that are people know about. And then maybe what are 2 or 3 that are like creative, interesting ones that you didn't know were even possible until you started doing it, and then you realized, well, that's pretty cool. We're making money there.
So, I mean, the print magazine is definitely the leader, and, you know, people often say, I mean, it sucks the most money and resources by
exactly.
far. It's the least profitable by far. In fact, it doesn't even make a profit. It makes a loss still 2.5 years
yeah.
in. But it's so important, because in an age where, you know, there's so much, and you will have experienced this, it's hard to get cut through online because there's so much noise. And so for me, having something physical and tangible, and a lot of what we've done is we do a lot of sampling, and I have 3 people now who purely work full-time on non-monetary partnerships. So we look at, you know, what big conferences or events for entrepreneurs and creatives and designers and all that kind of thing can we partner with? And I realize now that a lot of my currency is content, so we can do stories on all of these fabulous people as long as it fits with the integrity of the magazine. But in exchange, you know, they can sample magazines, all sorts of different things. So we're always looking at who are like-minded non-competing partners that we can collaborate with. So the print magazine is definitely, you know, a leader and a really important part for us. Events, absolutely. We just did a big one yesterday in Sydney, and they're good for revenue because now we, you know, get, we often do a contra with a venue. So again, thinking differently, and rather than paying for the food and beverage and things, we'll say, well, can you you know, can you host the event and cover all the food and bev and the venue hire and things, and in exchange we'll do a story on you. So that kind of helps. And then we make money from the ticket sales, and then now we attract pretty big sponsors to those events as well. So the events are doing really well, and they're also a way for our community to actually, you know, interact.
Come together,
so, yeah. Online, I definitely think is where our biggest share of revenue will come from, just because there's, you know, there's no boundaries in terms of what we can do. pardon me, that's still something that we're working on and trying to figure out. But collectivehub.com is kind of where it's all happening at the moment.
It's beautiful design. My
book. Oh, thank you. Well, as I said, whilst really the platforms are all about business and entrepreneurialism, I wanted to, you know, I think it's funny, people kind of a lot of the time think, okay, we're a business magazine, we have to look really dry and boring, and, you know, and I just thought, well, I want it to look beautiful and have an incredible design aesthetic and make it look like a fashion and design magazine. So it's this kind of weird morph of the two. Yeah. And my books, I mean, they have just gone nuts. And I think it's because I'm quite insane. Like, I did a pre-launch for Money and Mindfulness, which doesn't come out till the 1st of October. And yeah, on day one, we did, I think, 1,600 copies just online off our own website. And I love that now, because my deputy editor, Mel, was my first employee over 10 years ago. And then she went and had kids and came back. And she says to me, you know, it's nice having someone who's been around you for that long. Because she says to me, we have to remember, you know, there were so many years where we would sell maybe 3 books a month, if that. And so it's really beautiful now. And I think it's because well, you'll see if you read my books, I'm very sort of self-deprecating, and I talk a lot about, and which is true, I have no idea what I'm doing half the time, and I'm very honest about this is the journey, this is how much it costs, this is how I'm doing it, you know. And I think people have kind of gone, oh my God, well, she's just like kind of a nobody. If she can do it, we can do it too. So I think that's why they like it.
Yeah, you have what I call, you know, I talk about in my book, a principle of greatness called hustle. And for me, you're just constantly, you don't know what to do, but you're willing to figure it out. You're willing to dive for what I say, the loose balls in life. You know, the athletes on the sports teams, they're always going to have a starting spot or on the team if they're willing to dive and sacrifice for the ball when everyone else isn't willing to. The coach will always play that player because those loose balls are what matters the most in every single game when they're close at the end. And it sounds like you're willing to put your neck on the line, sacrifice your body, your mind, your, you know, your whatever
sure
it takes.
Not sure about the body thing yet, but whatever it takes.
You know, by not going, you know, by staying up late some nights and you know, building relationships, those type of things. And doing whatever it takes. And you have this art of the hustle that I call, and you go for it. And it doesn't have to be perfect. And everything you've done doesn't sound like it's perfect, but it's purposeful. And that has been kind of the guiding light for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, it's, you've got to get your hustle on every single day. And sometimes it's tough and you are, you know, paving new ways and doing things differently. And but you just got to do it.
So what are, what's bigger right now, the digital circulation or the print circulation? And are you able to share some of those numbers?
I'm terrible in terms of numbers. that is more, I'm not terrible in terms of numbers. I've just written an entire book about numbers. I know all the, sort of top level numbers, but,
what's the reach for both?
So the print magazine, we print at the moment 140,000 copies. So it's pretty sizable.
And mostly in Australia, right?
Most of that is in Australia, and then we ship out to the other regions at the moment from Australia, which is an extraordinarily expensive thing to do. So, for example, in the US, we're in every single Barnes & Noble store and now Hudson News. But the tricky thing about that is, you know, I'm not on the ground over there. So all the other 36 deals outside of Australia are distribution deals. So you know, a lot of it is organic growth at the moment, but thanks to you and, you know, many people in the US. We've had a lot of incredible support, so it's definitely kind of growing over there. The ideal scenario would be to, you know, move over there for a while and sure. actually, you know, print in the US and put some real kind of rigor behind it rather than letting it kind of grow organically. Yeah. But you can't, you know, you can only take on so many things at once.
And,
so I've got to kind of maintain focus where I can. But as I said, I will be spending an increasing amount of time in the US. I was there twice, 2 months ago, twice in a month. I was in New York and doing lots of stuff over there. So yeah, it's definitely the US is definitely our second market and probably will, you know, in time become our first market.
Right. Well, I'm curious now. Yeah. 2.5 years launching a print magazine, how do you get into Barnes & Noble and Hudson bookstores in airports? Like, what's the process for that? Like, if someone was launching a magazine, what would you say is the best way to make it happen?
You get your hustle on.
That's it.
Look, I think the thing is a few things. So I launched in March 2013, and then I think it was October 2013. So the first year I did the magazine bi-monthly, and then we went monthly. So as I said, you know, on the fourth issue, I flew over. And what I did was, before I went to Toronto, I went to the World Magazine Congress in Rome because I thought, okay, I just did it purely out of naivety for a while, and I thought I better actually go and see if I'm on the right track. And it turns out I was. You know, when you start to listen to speakers and you're like, yeah, okay, I'm kind of doing that, and so it was good. But you know, I'm a big advocate of investing in yourself, and it's funny, you put yourself out there, and often things that you don't expect to happen. And the first night that I was at that conference, I sat next to this guy, Philippe, who was the global syndication manager for the New York Times, which was just the most extraordinary contact. And it's funny, having published books for so many years, every single author has said to me, I want to be on the New York Times bestseller list. But they have talked about it like it's this unrealistic thing that's sort of on the moon and it's unreachable. And so what was interesting in meeting Philippe, and I was talking to him about our model in the magazine, and he said, look, I love what you do. If you're going to be in New York, I'd love to set you up to go and sit in on the page one editorial meeting, which is extraordinary, where the 18 divisional editors of the New York Times come together every day and talk about what's going to be on page one. And I said to him, well, actually, I'm going straight from Rome to New York in 3 days' time. So he set that up for me. And on the same night in Rome, I met Martha Stewart's vice president, Ruth. And she said, oh, if you're going to be in New York, you should come into the offices. And it was nuts. So within 3 days, I was in New York. And on the same day, I went and I went through the Martha Stewart offices and met all her team, and it was the most extraordinary experience. And then Martha ended up, I did an interview with her, and she ended up being on our issue 8 cover, which was amazing. She's phenomenal. And then on the same day, that afternoon, I went and sat in the New York Times editorial meeting, and the editor of the New York Times sat there and held up the magazine. I couldn't believe it. This was the Helena Christensen issue, right? And she and they held it up and said, look at this little Aussie is doing this thing. Anyway, I went back and was invited back to do that New York Times page one meeting a year later. And I don't know what issue we were on. Must have been 4+12. I don't know, issue 16 or 17 or something. And it was gorgeous. They held up the issue again, and everyone like gave me this like huge round of applause and was like, wow, look how far you've come. So doesn't really answer your question. The answer to that is I just started putting myself out there and getting in front of the right people. And as I said, I flew to Toronto, and every year or every 2 years, I'm not sure, it's called DistriPress, and it's where all the global magazine distributors come together. Mm-hmm. And I think the majority of people who went there, it's one of those things where you have a meeting every half an hour with a different distributor. And we managed to set up on day one 13 meetings with all these distributors. And I took my marketing director, Claire, over there with me. And we kind of were sitting there thinking, well, maybe no one will turn up, you know, where these little Aussies who know nothing about anything. And all 13 people turned up to the meetings. I think they were fascinated. And I think, and we did 13 deals with 13 different distributors from that fair. And I think the reason is when you truly believe in something and you speak from the heart, and, you know, so many people go into meetings and have PowerPoint presentations and speak to the slides, and I just speak from my heart and tell people what I'm doing. And I think I think they all just were like, whoa, these people have come all the way from Australia, and most other people there are like big publishers who actually know what they're doing. And I think they all just kind of fell in love with it and were like, wow, we'll give you a go. And also, I've done a lot of, you know, we were talking about pre-selling before. I've done a lot of weird deals, and it's I'm constantly, you know, let me give you an example. In Australia, and this happens all over the world, you have to pay, you know, to be ranged in airport news agencies. You've got to pay a lot of money to, you know, be in there and have a placement and things.
Yes.
And it was something like
4,000, with magazines or books?
Both.
Yeah, yeah.
But depending on countries and yes, and different outlets and things. But let's just as an example, in Australia, in one news chain alone, you've got to pay about $4,000 a week or something ridiculous, wow, to be just to have placement in the airports.
You're not going to sell enough to make it back, probably.
No, exactly. But the thing is, and they all wanted it up front. And then, you know, you have these floor-to-ceiling light walls, you know, and again, you need to pay up front. And I had to do a lot of hustle early on and convince these people, because I knew I didn't want to grow really slowly. I wanted to grow, you know,
big fast.
So big splash. So, and so I convinced them that, look, I don't have the money. I mean, I didn't have the money to pay for those things up front. So I said, I will guarantee you profit. Like, I will guarantee that I'm going to pay this on the back of it. And so people were like, she is nuts. Okay, we're going to give her a go. Huh. So I got all this amazing placement, and then I just had to back it up, you know. And that's where social media has been extraordinary. I think I'm a big believer, when you give a community – when you empower a community to feel a sense of belonging, they will do anything to help you. So I've always said, whilst I'm the only financial person involved in the collective at the moment, I don't own it. It's the community who owns it. And because I've kind of empowered them to do that, and I make it very much about them, they just carry the message for me, and they amplify and share the cover, and they shout it from the rooftops, and they tell their friends. And I've never experienced anything like it, and I'm just so incredibly grateful every single day. But I've taken a lot of crazy harebrained risks where I've promised people that I'd pay them, like, you know, ask about, and somehow it's just worked. But I talk a lot about, I mean, money and mindfulness is really all about those strategies. And because I don't know if this is so prevalent in the US, but I mean, I hear continuously people saying, I can't do this because I don't have enough money. And, yes, you know, this notion of finance and self-sabotage and things and fearfulness around it holds so many people back from reaching their full potential and their greatness. And so I kind of write a lot about how there's so many other ways, and cash isn't the only currency, and there's so many other ways to do deals. Yes. And that's when business becomes very exciting.
Yep.
And I also believe that, you know, doing good in the world and having money don't need to be mutually exclusive. And in fact, they go hand in hand, and money buys freedom and choice. So I talk a lot about that.
That's great. Yeah, I love it. I feel like you're my long lost sister who has the same vision and same experiences. And it's interesting. I have some fun facts about you, and maybe you are my long lost sister, is because you were born in Central West New South Wales. Is that right?
Yes. How do you even know that?
Well, I am a quarter Welsh. My grandmother's from Wales, and I believe my name is Welsh, which is Howes. I believe it's from Wales or Scotland or England, one of those. I've always tried to look back into it, and I always see Welsh descendants. So
really?
Yes. So we have something in common there. Also, another fun fact I heard about you is that you went to boarding school. Is that correct?
Yeah, I did. I was so naughty.
See, I went to boarding school as well. But I begged my parents to send me. They didn't even know about it. I just asked them because I wanted to get out of the house and away from the madness at home.
At boarding school, how funny, because I actually begged my parents to go as well, although I'm sure – I think my mother was very happy to see me go. She kind of had my bag packed and waiting at the door for me.
Amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to go back into the magazine. Yeah, I'm curious about the digital distribution and how that's been. Do you feel like the digital is more powerful for you because more people are online now? And now with the newsstand app, the new news feature, I mean, are you seeing an increase in that, or is it bigger in print?
So the print sales, in terms of the actual print magazine, so we sell the physical copies and then we also sell it across Zinio and Mag Shop and Pressreader. And the print physical sales are much higher. However, when we go to our online portal, collectivehub.com, the traffic, I think, is starting to, you know, way exceed the circulation of the print magazine, which is really interesting because the print magazine, so I have 23 full-time staff at the moment, and we have close to 80 freelance writers that we just pull in from all over the world, depending on, you know, industry and specialization and where they're based and who they can get access to and all that kind of thing. And that's been a very specific strategy. But what's interesting about that is, you know, until recently, as I said, the print magazine costs about $350,000 a month to put out. And the digital, you know, we've been putting probably, you know, with salaries, et cetera, about $12,000 a month. Yet the advertising across online is starting to exceed, you know, in Mac and all that kind of thing. So I've had to really do a lot of re-education with my team recently, kind of looking at the numbers and crunching and going, this makes no sense. Imagine if we put the same level of resources into online, like it would just be insane, I think. So we're really trying to, you know, I am trying to sort of teach myself. My team are far better at all of the digital stuff than me, but I'm kind of getting there. But I think that's where I think that's where there's an enormous opportunity for us, you know, because, the print magazine comes out once a month. So it's, you know, we try and make all the stories so that they have longevity. And, you know, the mag is very much like a coffee table read and all that kind of thing. And people can dip in and dip out and it's kind of timeless. But, you know, with online, we can do, at the moment, we're doing sort of 4 to 8 feeds a day with, you know, content. So it's a fair bit. But, you know, it's, yeah, there are no boundaries in terms of what we can do online, I think.
I love it. Well, the thing that's cool about you is, you know, in regards to your business with the magazine and everything you're doing there and the book, Money and Mindfulness, you know, the thing I love about it is you essentially said, I have a dream, I have a vision, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make it come true because you believed in it so much. And you were able to make a lot of money from that belief and that mindset. Can you talk to me a little bit? I want to ask a few more questions, but one of them is about the book. You know, if someone has a dream and just doesn't even think it's possible because they don't know how to make it happen to start just making a little bit of money, you know, a few thousand dollars a month, but they want to start going after it. They want to start doing something. I know you cover all this in your book, and I want to make sure everyone goes and gets it at collectivehub.com. It's right there on the homepage. You can go check it out right there. I believe that's the link, right?
Yes, it is. Thank you. Yeah.
Of course, yeah. What do you think would you tell someone? What's the piece of advice to get them started? Well, that'll get them a jump start before they get the book on what they can do.
Yeah, well, I think for me, it's all about really feeling deeply into what your purpose is or what your why is, you know? And I think, you know, that's the best place to start because, you know, once you understand that, everything, the sort of serendipity and the synchronicity, it all starts to kind of fall into place. And then the other thing is, you know, you've got to have an insatiable self-belief because if you don't believe in yourself, no one else will, you know, because as you keep, I love that you're a hustler as well because I'm a serious hustler. You've got to be out there and, you know, I'm probably, it's so weird, pardon me, for anyone who knows me, they would say, from an external perspective, they'd say I'm an extrovert. I'm actually quite introverted. Like I love, you know, being home on my couch or going for a run or, you know, or being in the outdoors and kind of just being with a really close group of friends. That's kind of me. And yet now my life is, you know, being on the speaking circuit 3 or 4 times a week and like being out there and being really vocal about everything and kind of putting my life on a platter. And that is not my natural state, but I've learned that, well, I'm not going to make a difference or do anything great in this world by not putting myself out there. And so I do that. And then the other thing is, you know, to fail fast. I mean, as we were talking about before, I think people get so caught up in limiting beliefs. And I think, I mean, I've done years of, you know, therapy and reading and all sorts of things. So I kind of can talk a lot about that. But, you know, we have we all have these limiting beliefs that are, you know, handed from generation to generation, or things that have happened in our childhood and whatever else. And so I think the sooner people get comfortable and have a true understanding of what holds them back and why, and all of that kind of thing, then all that sort of starts to fall away and life becomes much more seamless and in flow. So I think, you know, it's all about then, you know, once you realize what your purpose is or what you're wanting to do, don't worry so much about the money. Like, actually just go out and pre-sell, and, you know, there's plenty of money and there's so much abundance out there, and start to, you know, start to tell people about your vision, and people will start to come to you and, you know, provide you with money, and think about what, you know, what's your currency and what tangible saleable assets have you got? You know, is it your intellectual property, or is it, you know, whatever it happens to be? I mean, there are things that you can sell before you actually have to make them. And I mean, I fail at least 20 times a day now, like quite seriously. And I love it, because what I mean by that is they're just small, quick failures. And it's because I'm well networked now. I've got some great contacts. I've been building that up over many, many years, that I can, you know, ping an email off to someone in HR or a marketing director at a big corporate, and I can say, hey, I've got this idea. It might be for an event, or it might be for a new product, or it might be for all sorts of other things. And they can quickly come back to me and say, no, that's not going to work, or, you know, or I can iterate or pivot or change or whatever. But I'm going to pre-sell the idea and before I actually make it, essentially. Sure. So I think they're kind of some of the tips. And the one question I ask myself every single day without fail is why? Why am I doing this? Because I think as well, once you start to have a level of success, and, you know, if my life were a book, and it is now turning into several very
multiple
quickly,
books.
But I mean, I would say I'm on, you know, chapter one, page one, paragraph one, really. Like, I have so much more to do. And so so there's that fine line all the time of not letting your ego get in the way of, yes, you know, the bigger picture. And so whilst extraordinary things are happening and amazing opportunities are opening up for me, every single day I go, why am I doing this? And the reason I'm doing this is to help other people and empower them. So I go, that's what I'm doing. And does everything I'm doing fall into line with that? And do the people that I'm doing deals with share similar values and beliefs? And if so, then, yep, let's move forward. So it's just, I think it's a lot of self-reflection and really understanding who you are and what your purpose is, and then things just start to happen.
I love it. I've got three final questions. I want to make sure everyone, we'll have this all linked up in the show notes, so I'll tell you guys where to go to get all this information in a few moments. But make sure to follow at Lisa Messenger and at Collective Hub on Instagram. That's where I first found her. I'll link everything up for you guys here in a second. But three final questions. One is, what are you most grateful for in your life recently?
Oh my goodness. I have a gratitude diary. In the world I live in now, that sounds so kind of cliche because so many people have these things, I think, but I'm grateful for so many things. But really, I'm grateful for our community. They're the people who just carry us along and lift us higher every day and help me to be a better person. So that I'm extraordinarily grateful for.
I love it. These last two questions are something I ask everyone at the end. One is, if all of your books that you've ever written, all the magazines you've ever published, all the things you've ever said online have been erased, and it's the final day for you, and you have a piece of paper, and you get to write down three truths that will be the last three things that you get to share to the world about what you know to be truth about your experience so far, what would you say are your three truths?
Oh my goodness. Okay, here we go.
Getting real, Lisa.
I would say anything is possible. That I know to be 100% true now. And that we are all equal. That's something I know to be sure. I mean, I could go on and on about why. And I'd say, there's so many things, but yeah, what else would I say? There's so many things. You've got me.
So the first one, what was the first one?
So yeah, what did I say? I said anything's possible, and, you know, and that everyone is equal. And I think, you know, be selfless, I would say. I think from being selfless and doing things with integrity, extraordinary things happen. So I think that's kind of what I know now. Okay. It's so easy for us to be selfish and to get caught up in our own, particularly in this sort of narcissistic world. Like, there's so much. But if you can kind of wind it back and think about why you're doing this and if it's for sort of the greater good and for other people, I think the rewards come back in so many ways.
I love that. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Okay. Well, I have one final question before I ask. I want to acknowledge you for a moment, Lisa, for your passion for living your dreams. And I believe that not enough people have enough passion for their dreams. So I want to acknowledge you for that passion, for the ability to tackle whatever it takes, knowing that you're going to fail. And getting back up every single day, because that is a very scary thing for most people to do, specifically when you have no money coming in. So I want to acknowledge you for your joy, your passion for your dream, and for being committed to your vision every single day to serve and inspire other people. So thank you for all you do.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And I have one final question. And
I'm scared. This is going to be about kangaroos or something crazy. I can feel it coming.
It's,
okay, I'm ready.
It's, what's your definition of greatness?
Oh, my definition of greatness. I think my definition of greatness. I think probably being truly on purpose and being able to live with freedom and choice every single day. So whatever that means to you. People often say to me now, oh, now the collective's had some success. I still laugh at that, as I said at the very beginning. But they say to me, when are you going to exit? What's your exit strategy? And I go, well, if someone gave me $100 million today, I would not sell it for any money in the world. You know, I've spent my entire life searching for what my purpose is, and I finally got it. So, yeah, if I had $100 million, great, but I'd still be just sitting there going, what's my purpose? So I think, you know, having the freedom and choice to do what you want in the world, I think that's greatness and inspiring others, yeah.
I love it. Lisa Messenger, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom.
Thank you, Lewis. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've loved it. You're a fantastic interviewer. Very easy.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. And there you have it, guys. This is, again, episode number 234. Make sure to share it with your friends, lewishouse.com/234. If you enjoyed this, tell a friend. Lisa, it was such a pleasure having her on. Make sure to follow her over on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, and check out The Collective, the magazine, because it's an inspiring magazine. And she is just cool what she's done to build this business from scratch and take it to where it is now. Such an inspiring story. Make sure to check it out. Share this with your friends. Thank you guys again for being here, for showing up each and every week, for listening to this message about greatness, for inspiring yourselves, and for sharing this with your friends to inspire them as well. You guys know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.